To succeed in sales, you need to understand that everyone is extremely selfish. And you need to understand what is the relevancy between your selfish needs and their selfish needs. And hiring managers' selfish needs is that they suffer when it comes to hiring.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is a special episode we're recording in person in Tampa, Florida. And my special guests today are Don Don Zhu and Grace Marlin, who are co-founders of DG Recruit.
The reality is, and I think a lot of people can agree with this, recruiters don't have the best reputation in most markets, unfortunately. However, that makes it actually very, very easy to be better. Like, you do just do a couple things differently and show up to your market differently, and people will, they'll notice, you'll stand out. They're like, wow, I've never had an experience with a recruiter like that. So even though we have to overcome the objection of people not wanting to work with us or having a negative past experience, if you can show them that you are not like that through just a few little things and following through with what you say you're going to do, like, you're going to get a lot more business compared to your competitors.
DG Recruit is a really successful US-based rec-to-rec agency. In other words, they recruit recruiters for recruitment agencies. Don Don and Grace, welcome. I'm really excited that we're doing this.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having us.
So Don Don, you've been on the show before, and which was a lot of fun. So, but how did you guys get together? Tell me that story.
Oh, this was way back when I was doing a lot of podcast interviews about my journey in recruitment and financial wealth. And I was on a FIRE podcast, Financial Independence, Retire Early. And Grace was one of the people that listened to that episode. And we got connected through there. And one thing led to another. I went out to San Francisco to meet her. And here we are.
So podcasts are special to us because that's actually what brought us together.
That is so cool. That is the power of, well, putting content out there, right? And podcasting in particular is a very intimate medium, and really you feel like you get to know both the host and the guest. You guys are both awesome on LinkedIn as well. Like, if our listeners are not already following you, probably most of them are, but if they're not, then they should definitely start doing that, because you've really put out a lot of value for recruiters, owners, as well as recruiters who are wanting to build their careers. So you heard Don Don on a podcast, and then what happened from there?
Yeah, I was in a very interesting space in my life because I was ready for something new. I just didn't know what it was going to be. So I was seeking, and I was, you know, consuming a lot of content and trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life next. And I had big aspirations and big goals, but I didn't know how I wanted to get there. So when I heard her interview, I was actually at the gym listening to it, and I was like, this is somebody who knows who they are and where they're going. And this is the energy that I need in my life. So I listened to it a couple of times, and for the first time in my life, and I don't think I've done it since, ended up reaching out to her and emailed her and was like, I don't completely understand what you do or what your business is, but I'm interested in potentially working for you. And that's how we started working together. So it was a very like kismet, serendipitous experience.
Wow.
And I'm so grateful to this day for it. It's changed my life.
That's so cool. When is this?
This was 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, 2018.
Amazing. So I guess you've been Grace's mentor and, you know, got her to this point where she's now like the co-owner of the business. Listen, I should have said in the intro, you're also a speaker and trainer yourself. And so what I'd love to do is be quite tactical in this session and make, those are the episodes people love anyway, is where they get insights and tips and strategies that help them to build more and to, you know, be more successful. So like, what do you see happening in the recruiting space in the last, because the last couple of years have been kind of weird, right?
Yeah. In terms of just ups and downs, you thought that, you know, once COVID was over, things would go back to normal, but 23 and 24 were tough years.
Yeah.
So I think this industry, what hasn't changed is, to the name of your podcast, the resiliency that is required for people to stay in the game, be disciplined, and continue doing the things that they have to do to reach the results they want to achieve. So I think that just hasn't changed. And that's always been the challenge in this industry, is sticking with the program, continue to do those things without losing steam, without losing focus. So I think everyone has a different circumstance when it comes to that, whether it's life experiences, personal situation, maybe something happened in their market or something happened in their company if they work for someone else. So I think that it's a very subjective. It depends who you ask. Everybody's year, everybody's challenge looks a little bit different.
I think one other thing too is we haven't experienced such a sharp market correction for about like a decade, right? So a lot of people who are in the industry had never been subjected to those circumstances of like extreme rapid change of, you know, a very, very overheated hot market where it felt like deals were falling from the sky. Nobody had to really develop business. If anything, they were turning away business because there was just too much to go around, to a complete what felt like an ice age desert where it was really, really hard to make deals happen. And most people were not prepared for it. Obviously, how could you be? You can't predict the future. But beyond that, it was such an extreme change in circumstances that it made a lot of people question everything about themselves, their desk, their capabilities. And I think it showcased whether they were prepared for and had a diversified, stable business or were overinflated by one account that they were focusing on and didn't really have other sources of doing deals.
Well said, absolutely. Dondon, you mentioned that, like, are people doing those things that consistently that make you successful in this business? And that really hasn't changed. So in your mind, what are those things? Like, what are the most important things that the top billers do consistently that average billers maybe do? They do it as well, but maybe not as consistently.
Yeah. I think to hop onto Grace's point, what people were not doing was building their client pipeline alongside their fulfillment needs. So people got very comfortable with the one or two Z's or three Z's that they had, these accounts that they thought wouldn't dry up. And what happened? Things changed. And people were scrambling. And you hear a lot of people say, well, they're just nobody paying fees right now. Yes, they are. They're just not giving it to you because you did not make that relationship.
Right.
So what do top billers do differently? And what do I see majority of people not doing, which kind of shocks me because I'm like, we can do this. It's, you know, we were taught to do this in our 20s, right? It's like, go out and meet people.
Right.
Go out and set up a webinar for your network, for your niche. Go and set up a panel and invite your clients to be part of that as a BD tool. All the playbook is there. We all know that that exists. But how many people are saying, okay, I'm going to take concept. I'm going to take that theory. I'm going to put it into practice. And I'm going to use this and actually create an event, pop on a webinar on Zoom, use this as a BD tool to talk to all my clients and like prospective clients. I say, hey, you want to come on and be a speaker? That's free BD opportunity. You don't even have to go and get coffee at that point. But, you know, obviously the in-person meetings, the in-person things that we're doing here, you know, that's very valuable. You teach, I know in your program, a lot of content creation using podcasts as a way to build your authority in a space. We all know the playbook, but how many people have said, all right, I'm going to go and sign up and create that podcast and do it consistently? Right. So I think it's more of that in person, more engaged, very much high profile. How many people are taking that step?
I think the overall thing is who is willing to go one to two steps deeper than everyone else. And it's not stuff that's extremely difficult. Most of it is free, right? Content creation, especially social media content creation, is free. They're all things that are available to everyone to equal playing field. But who's willing to invest the time into something that isn't going to show immediate ROI? It may take 6 to 8 months to really start getting there, but you have to be consistent. And once your network sees you showing up that way and they start to take you seriously, they will give you more business, but you have to be willing to make that investment before that you can see the results.
Love this. This is really interesting. So there's a blend of stuff that you guys talk about, which some of which are very strategic and some are very tactical. So for example, the strategy you just laid out with putting together a panel or a roundtable or a webinar, inviting your clients, and that's just an amazing way to open doors and develop business with potential clients, as well as positioning yourself in your marketplace at the same time. And then I know in your program, you also teach like NPC marketing, for example, which is, which is very tactical. What do you think is the reason that some people can get themselves to take consistent action and do those things that are going to move the needle while other people are sitting on the sidelines?
I think it's two things. One is commitment to a specific niche. a lot of times, and you hear this a lot with the fear from a lot of folks who haven't really invested in a niche, they're scared because they're like, well, what happens if that niche dries up? So if they're scared of committing to a niche, why would they put in the effort to become the market leader, the authoritarian SME voice for that niche, if they don't fundamentally believe that the niche strategy works? So I think it's a matter of philosophy and then a commitment to that strategy. Because to your point, it's completely tactical. It's a strategic approach. It's saying, I'm not going to be a jack of all trades. I'm not going to go for RPO model. I'm going to go straight for high-end premium niche. That's the market strategy that some people are too scared to commit to because they don't know how to say no to business, right? If they meet someone on the street, hey, I want to hire an HR person. Great, sign me up. Hey, I want to hire a cleaner. Oh, great, let's sign me up, right? There's people that are looking to pick up deals, but they're not strategic about it.
I think your family had a Chinese restaurant, right?
Yep.
So an analogy that I sometimes use is, you know, because the clients will sometimes say, well, I'm just a great recruiter. I can recruit anything, right? I can recruit, you know, for any type of company or any position. That's like saying, like, oh, I'm a great chef. I can cook anything. So, you know, whatever people want to order, you know, if they want Chinese food, we'll give them that. If they want Indian food, we'll give them that. If they want them steak. Can you imagine trying to run a restaurant where you are going to serve any type of food that the client wants? That would make zero sense, right? And yet that's what we're trying to do if you're like a generalist recruiter saying yes to everything. So I think that's a great point. So being clear on your niche and committing to that. What else do you think are some of those key success factors?
I think the next one is just confidence of having a voice. So many people are like, imposter syndrome. Who am I? I'm a recruiter with 2 years of experience. Who am I to go and interview and put onto a panel of folks that are, you know, Fortune 500 leaders? I don't even feel comfortable being a leader of that panel. Right. So there's a lot of this challenge where it's also internal. Maybe they don't have the skill set. Maybe it's a confident issue. It could be both. So then maybe that's not the right strategy. Start small. It doesn't mean you shouldn't aspire to do it.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, until you do it, you're not going to do it. Just like, when are you going to start public speaking? You got to do it one day, right? There's going to be something. Could be in front of 100 people, could be in front of 20 people, but you got to start somewhere. So maybe it's not a 300-person panel that everyone's going to come and you're going to hire the best leaders to speak. Fine, do a small gathering of your local clients in a specific marketplace, right? So I did like pottery painting as a client event, candidate client entertainment event.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because a lot of my network at that time were middle-aged women with kids. What did they like to do? Where did they live? Jersey, Pharma Belt. What do they want to spend their weekend on? Hang out with their kids. Let's create something that they can join and not feel like it's a chore. So you kind of got to customize your activities to the clientele, your niche, what they do, what they like to do. So for recruitment, I was already thinking, you got ping pong tournaments, you got pickleball tournaments, you got happy hours, right? So those are the things that we did in the beginning of DG Recruit to really make a splash, was set up events that speak to our niche network.
I love that. I didn't know that you were doing that. So wait a second. How did you come up with these ideas? Because they're not things I would have thought of, right? And they're more social as well, which is right. Interesting. So what was your philosophy there?
Well, for agency recruiters, we like to do, you know, people like to drink, people like to eat. Those are very, very few agency recruiters would say no to free food and free drink. And true. A lot of them live in New York City. So a lot of our clients were in New York City at the time. So it was just like, oh, make a few calls.
We did rooftop events. Yep. We would go like rent out a bar and have people yep. come through. And all of it was just networking and talking shop. But it was equal personal and professional. Like yeah. people would come and bring their whole team. Like who was going to say no to free booze yeah. on a Thursday yeah, night yeah. close to the office? And yep. obviously they'll have a chance if they want to talk to us. They can talk to us. Not we were trying to talk to everybody. But beyond that, it was more letting our network know that we were spending money on them and that we were invested in them and that we were committed to this industry. Like we are not, right. we're not just trying to come in and get a couple deals and like, you know, hopefully they leave and everything works out. Like we are committed. We're in this space. We're not going anywhere. And that was the messaging that we cared to send. And I think it really resonated.
Right.
What I love is that you guys think big. And I think a lot of people are playing small. Why is that? Because, you know, the things you're describing, maybe it's worrying about the cost, like, oh,
Right.
Putting on a rooftop bar, mm-hmm. that sounds like really expensive. Or it might be, if it's a webinar or an event, they might feel that imposter syndrome. But you guys are just absolutely going for it and thinking big. What's been the ROI on that?
It's really hard to quantify, and I think that's probably why some people don't want to do it either, is because it's really difficult to say, oh, we placed this candidate because we met them at this event. But I can definitely say we have had much higher odds of placing those candidates and like have a closer relationship with them, and there's more trust and they're much more likely to refer their friends. So we haven't tracked the ROI down to that level, and we probably should. But honestly, it's a bit difficult to do it, because if I was to ask them, like, would you not have been represented by me if you didn't meet at this event? I don't know what their answer would be. And I don't even know if they would know that. But it's still an investment into the market. And I think that's what makes a difference, because like you said, so many people are not doing that. So the reality is, and I think a lot of people can agree with this, recruiters don't have the best reputation in most markets, unfortunately. However, that makes it actually very, very easy to be better. Like, you do just do a couple things differently and show up to your market differently, and people will, they'll notice, you'll stand out. They're like, wow, I've never had an experience with a recruiter like that. So even though we have to overcome the objection of people not wanting to work with us or having a negative past experience with different recruiters that they worked with, if you can show them that you are not like that through just a few little things and following through with what you say you're going to do, like, you're going to get a lot more business compared to your competitors.
From an ROI perspective, I mean, in the past, let's say those pottery painting things, or when I go out to a conference, you can always track that. Okay, that year I met that person. 2 years later, that became a placement. So it's all about timing, right? So it's like not immediate. It's not like, yes, oh, I see you at the pottery painting place and next day we're placing you. It's the longer game, where you also have to, back to that term, tactical strategy. You don't just do a pottery painting and that's it. You stay in touch with them every single month. And that's a process I call the golden loop, right? You stay in touch with them every month and you reiterate to them why you want to be loyal to me, why you want to only work with me, why am I that resource for you? It's maintaining that exclusivity, that relationship with the candidate, locking down your product, educating the product on the benefits of them remaining loyal. It's having that connection that takes that pottery painting to placement. Right. And sometimes you get lucky. You go to a conference, the right person happens to walk by your booth.
Yep.
And 2 months later, that is a placement. That's not guaranteed. That's a cherry on top. And that's you being there at the booth, being very eager and taking advantage and very opportunistic.
Yes.
Right. Some people go to these conferences, they're not engaged. They're not out there trying to really pick up clients and candidates. They're just there for the tchotchkes, which I absolutely love, but I am always sniffing out, like, who, these are so many like bang on target people here. So who can I make connections with, and how can we take that to a relationship beyond just, hey, you came by our booth and took a pen?
And I actually have a follow-up point to that, which is like talking about why do some people do it and why do some people not do it. And in our work as Rec to Rex, we talk to so many agency recruiters at various stages in their career. And I think the key difference that I have seen in the people who become successful, even if they're not top billers at that point, I may talk to someone when they're struggling, when they're having a down month, they're kind of not sure if this is right for them or not. And they're really sussing out this career point and they're at an inflection point. If that person decides to fully commit to this, then they will put everything in there. They will be willing to think differently. They're willing to put themselves out there. They're willing to push themselves beyond their comfort zone. But that will not happen until they have full commitment. So those may be the people that, even if they're going to the conference, they're just standing at the booth. They're not going out and talking to people. They're showing up. Yes, they're showing up to their office. They're showing up. They're hitting their KPIs. They're doing the minimum. They're doing what they need to do. But those are the people who are very rarely going to see a lot of success, because their heart just isn't in it. Whether it's they're still figuring out if this is the right career path for them, which, as we know, it's not the right career path for many, many people, and that's fine. But that's the half commitment is, I think, one of the like deeper psychological issues about why people don't end up working out. Unless they're willing to go all in, it's very unlikely that they're going to have a lot of results to show for it.
Love this. My brain's going five different directions at once. Let me just sort of recap. So I think you've absolutely nailed it, Grace. And as I think about it, is how committed are you to being successful at this? Are you all in, to use your phrase you just used a minute ago? Because that's kind of like the foundation, and you can go, you can build from there. So having that commitment. The other thing that I loved that you guys said is, like, you are thinking bigger than, like, what business can I get next week? Like, you're thinking longer term, and you're thinking bigger, and you're doing things that other recruiters and agencies aren't willing to do, putting on events, thinking about how we can really engage with our market, meeting people in person. So these are all brilliant. Could you elaborate on your golden loop? What does that mean? I understand it's nurturing and following up, but can you expand on that?
So golden loop was a concept I was taught pretty much year one of recruiting.
Okay.
And the idea is that every single month you are catching up with every single relevant person in your niche. So anybody that you have placed goes into your golden loop. Anybody that you had interview for you goes into the golden loop. Anybody that you've met in person or that you've spoken on the phone with goes into this golden loop. And the idea is that you're curating this loop and deepening the relationships every single month. And it's like clockwork. And a big issue that a lot of people have is that they lose touch with a good candidate or a potential future client because they're talking to them once every 6 months. In that time, somebody else is doing it once every month. So it's a competitive edge that you're maintaining this touch point. And it's not talking business. It's not pitching candidates necessarily. It's keeping in touch with people as a baseline strategy. How are you doing? How are your kids? You take notes, right? You got an ATS system. You try to get one or two nuggets of personal information. Hey, how's it going with your tennis elbow? Hey, how's it? When was your last trip? How did you like going to Florida? It's like going back to Bill Buffini's training in real estate sales, which I did briefly for a couple months in college. And it's this monthly touch point, right? You're just trying to get in touch with them. I mean, he had you mail cards and stuff. That's not necessary. Simple phone call will do. Even just the effort to make the phone call says something. You follow up with the text. Hey, missed you. Just wanted to say hi. How you doing? Right? There's so many parallels between different sales careers. And like my realtor, she sent me one message a year later. I'm like, this lady's not golden looping, right? How much more money would she be making if she's taking regular contact with, and I'm considered a placement, right? We bought a house from her. So it's the same idea. It's like, you got to keep in touch with your network every month, because what's the main thing you're going to ask for on the golden loop? Referrals.
Let me drill down on this a little more, because I think this is so valuable, and yet, and it's pretty straightforward, but it's very underutilized. And I think most people do it wrong. And because what I hear and see people doing is, oh, I'm just calling to touch base, or I wanted to find out if you have any hiring needs yet, or, you know, it's very superficial and also very me oriented. Like, you know, what have you got? What have you got jobs for me yet?
Right.
So what do people need to be thinking when they're doing those golden loop follow-up calls? And you've given a lot of good suggestions already, but any other, you mentioned referrals as the real objective. So
that's a closer. That's the last CTA, right? You're not going to start off asking for referrals. Hello, how you doing? Can you give me a referral? No. So of course, I think when you know you're going to golden loop, you know this is going to be a strategy of yours. So on that first call, I think so many people underestimate the power of the intake call. If a candidate doesn't give me a decent amount of time to have an intake call, that intake call is not complete. Like, I need to use that time. And this is why my phone times were always very long. It was because every conversation I had was over 20, 30 minutes with some random stranger. And that's the goal. The goal is to keep them. It's a game. The game is, how long can I keep them on the phone where they're entertained, where we're building a relationship, where I'm kind of easing into friendship therapist coach mode, right? That's where you want to be with your network, where that's a real relationship, where they're like, that wasn't just a recruitment call. That was somebody that actually took an interest, Dale Carnegie, right? Back to that, how to win friends and influence people. That's someone who is now, I'm interested in them. We had a few laughs. We got to talk about some things that I found myself surprised to talk about. And so this is something that it's almost counterintuitive because everyone wants to talk business. But in business, everything starts off with, do I like this person?
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Did you guys read Influenced by Robert Cialdini?
No.
Really, really good book. One of the, so he's a psychology professor, but he wrote a book about sales. And he, one of the principles is liking. But the key is not to try and be likable. The key is to show that you like someone else. And that's what creates the influence. And because you can't make yourself likable. Like, how do you do that, right?
Right.
But just by taking a sincere interest in someone, showing that you're interested, that you like them, right? Because if someone likes you, you can trust them. Because if they like you, they're going to look out for your best interests and not try and, you know, do anything that would undermine that. So I love this approach. And also the idea, it is counterintuitive because a lot of people try and get calls done quickly, which is, you know, and I like making it a game of how long can I stay on the phone here? Mm-hmm. I had a client also, because you were at S3 before, right?
Yep.
So I had a client who was also X3 and he called, now it was particularly on sales calls, but he called it the bucking bronco. And the goal is to keep them on the phone as long as you can by asking open questions, by asking follow-up questions, and not just like yes or no sort of questions. Because of course, like, how can you sell anything to anyone if, you know, you don't have rapport, if like it's in a 2 or 3 minute conversation, it's not going to happen, right? And even if for candidates, they say, yeah, I'm interested, please send me to the job, but you haven't really bottomed out their motivations, their, you know, why they're leaving, what would, you know, motivate them to change and so on, then you're not going to be able to influence them.
No. Right?
It's completely in the lap of the gods, whether or not that deal is going to happen. So love the golden loop philosophy. Keep it coming. This is awesome stuff, guys. Like when you're coaching your recruiting clients and helping them to really level up in their career so they can make more money and they can advance. What are the other things that you're teaching them?
I think the MPC strategy is something people really need help with. And even when I was trained in it, we were never given the exact blueprint. Like, nobody said, this is what a send out actually should look like. This is what an actual resume profile that you attach this send out. That's what this should look like. It was more like, here's a general cover sheet, you know, fill it in. Here's attach the resume later in it. Just make sure it's blinded so they can't steal your candidate. And then just write some stuff about the candidate and just send it off. So everyone would, there's no like template. There was no guide rail. And so everybody had extremely varying degrees of result from the MPC strategy. And I think that kind of crosses everything that there is with recruiting, is that there's sort of this general coaching. And then there's, how are you going to customize it to your demographic, your niche? Same with intro statements when you're cold calling. You know, we were given a training module, write out about this company, your company, who you're calling from, and what do you do? You try it on a 1 or 2 client calls, you realize they don't give a crap about.
They don't care, absolutely.
They don't care about A, B, C. They don't care. They are like annoyed. So what do? You just iterate. And that just kind of made me go, okay, guys, cut that out. The strategy is sell the MPC right away. Boom, boom, boom. Don't even stop. Don't even breathe. Don't and on your way through it. Sell something irresistible and do it in a tone that is acceptable to the client. And for a lot of 23-year-olds, they have this intimidating, you know, they're intimidated by this client. So there's a lot of factors that go into everyone's issue. Some people it's purely how they communicate, how they sound on the phone. They're nervous. Clients can pick up on that energy. Anyone can, right? Or they're bored. I'm just calling from ABC company. I got this great candidate. Would love to see if you're hiring right now. What's happening? Like, you know, everyone has their unique problem. You run a role play. It's like, oh, right? Or they sound great for the first minute and then the conversation peters out. So everyone has, like I said at the beginning of this conversation, it's so subjective because everyone's at a different stage of their sales growth.
Okay, awesome. I'd love to hear your thoughts as well, Grace. Just on the MPC, I should have said, because I kind of assume, but not everyone knows what this is. So it stands for most placeable candidate. The idea is that you have a highly placeable candidate who has skills, experience that your market really craves, and you're representing them proactively to a target list of companies to try and ideally get an interview for the candidate. But actually, the goal is just, it's a way of getting your foot in the door and starting a conversation and showcasing the quality of talent that you have access to, really. So it is a great strategy. And now, but sometimes this is as old as the hills. Some people are like, oh, that doesn't work anymore. What do you say to that?
Well, they're just not doing it right.
Yeah, right.
It just comes down to that because if you've ever been a true prospector building out a true cold desk, there's really not much else to talk about other than either, hey, want to be on my podcast? Hey, want to come to my networking event? Hey, do you want to be at a panel and be a speaker? And the MPC. Because again, people don't want to hear you say, do you got a minute so I can tell you about my dinky company, about little me? Who are you? Do you do not respect my time? Because that's a you-centered call. Back to the value of that call. It's completely self-serving you. So I wrote this in one of my posts, which is like, to succeed in sales, you need to understand that everyone is extremely selfish. And you need to understand what is the relevancy between your selfish needs and their selfish needs. And hiring managers' selfish needs is that they suffer when it comes to hiring. So what is the solution? MPC. That's one of the many ways that you can start conversations and build the credibility.
Absolutely. So two things on that. One, I agree 100% when you said if MPC is not working for you, you're not doing it right. Here's the thing, like anytime someone says, oh, that doesn't work, and it's like they make a general statement like that, then the answer always is you're not doing it right. Because we all meet successful recruiters, you know, every day, and they're all doing things, you know, differently. And there's somebody making that strategy work right now. The one you said that doesn't work, I know I can probably count 5 or 10 people I know personally who are doing really well with that strategy. So, but it's being prepared to really dissect it, understand the nuance, work on everything from your tone of voice, the quality of the questions, the structure, your opening. The other thing you said, which I thought was, so I think selfish is strong, but I totally get your point that everyone cares most about themselves, right? That's the way we're filtering the world is there's so much information coming at us. The only things we really can pay attention to are in relation to, is this going to get me closer to my goals and what I want? What's important to me? Or is this going to get me away from my problems and the painful things that I'm dealing with right now? And we're all processing the world that way. And so we need to, whatever we are asking of someone else, we need to show them how that's going to help them to get closer to their goal or further from their problem, right? Grace, what about you? What are some other things that you guys have observed in working with clients and candidates that you think separate the people who are, you know, haven't quite hit their stride yet and the ones who are really in flow?
Honestly, I feel like what you guys discussed was very comprehensive, but I think it goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning of the conversation, which is that times are rapidly changing and the market will continue to rapidly evolve and change as time goes on. We don't know what's going to happen a year from now. We just know what we're dealing with right now. We know what happened in the past 2 years. And so we've already seen a very rapidly evolving market. The people who have the most tools available to them and the most different approaches and different ways that if they have a flexible mindset that they want to understand how to adapt to the needs of the market, those are the people who are going to be successful long term. Because no matter what the market throws at them, which God only knows it could be anything, they're going to be ready for it. So the whole this does not work or I don't want to do that or that's just not how I operate. Like those are the people who are going to be left behind as the market continues to evolve, especially since we're experiencing very rapid change with technology advances, stuff that we talked about in the conference over the past couple of days, there's a lot of things afoot. So the more that we have an open mind for ourselves, the more that we'll understand what the market needs from us. Because the reality is, like we were talking about, at the end of the day, we obviously want to close deals and continue running our business and make money. That's why we're here. But the, we do that by servicing our market. There, we cannot make money until our market feels that we are worth the value that we are asking them to pay us. And they're not going to pay us unless they see the value there. So if we have the mindset and put on the hat of we need to provide that value, however that is, then that's how we're going to be successful. And that's how we're going to continue making money, even when it might be difficult to make money.
Absolutely. We didn't talk about the conference. You guys came to our live summit in St. Petersburg, Florida. Thank you so much for making the trip all the way from New York City. That was awesome to get to hang out with you in person. So what were your kind of key takeaways or impressions from that?
Wow. I think the key takeaway for me was just like everyone is absolutely on their own journey as it relates to entrepreneurship, lifestyle, you know, strategy to their market and just mindset, frame of life. And that was really nice to see. It was just like, there is no set path. We're all going to walk our own way and find our own niche and our own approach to the market. And so it was just really reassuring to understand, hey, in a room full of entrepreneurs, that we're all just kind of figuring it out. And some people are doing it with great success stories that we could learn from. And some people are showing us alternate ways of how they're approaching their life and business. So it's really, really nice to expand the view a little bit.
Awesome. Grace?
Yeah. There were so many takeaways. It was, I thought it was extremely valuable. We've both been talking every day after we were done with the sessions about how inspiring it was and how amazing it was to really learn about these things and just kind of move away from the day-to-day of being in the business and like thinking about clients and candidates and doing deals and just the very like hands-on stuff to thinking a bit more long-term about where the industry is heading and how people are finding success. Like what are some of the paths that they're doing using to scale their business? And I feel like I have so much going on in my head right now, and I'm excited to like be able to decompress when I get home and really think through everything. But it was really, really valuable. And I think we'll definitely come in the future. So yeah. Anyone who's on the fence about coming should highly consider it.
Oh, thanks, Grace. Look, this has been super valuable. We've only scratched the surface. What are some opportunities for people to learn more from you guys?
For us, we're pretty big on LinkedIn, so definitely follow us every yes. day we post. I have a resource called agencyrecruitmentacademy.com, and that is the MPC course. I also do monthly trainings. I'm about to launch a monthly Q&A mastermind format. And then I do, like on Tuesday, for instance, I'm doing an MPC live edit. So I'm actually asking people to send me all their MPC profiles. And I'm going to show them, okay, this is why I like it. This is what I don't like. This is how I would redo it. I share with people kind of that format I mentioned that so many people don't have. So that's going to be a really fun event. So agencyrecruitmentacademy.com, our podcast, DG Recruit Podcast. I'm about to do a lot of stuff on YouTube. So as long as you stay in touch with us, mainly on LinkedIn, that's where you're going to get all the updates and know exactly what's happening.
Fantastic. Guys, I know you have a plane to catch. So I could talk to you for another hour, but I know we can't do it this time. But please do come back again. Like, let's do part three of the Don Don Zoo and Grace podcast. Is that all right?
That sounds we would love like that. A plan. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you Thanks, for having guys. Us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button and I'll see you next time.